Human design kind of guides you towards where it is centered. It doesn't have to be a physical place in your body, but it already shows you how it speaks to you.
You're listening to the Octave Leap Podcast, a coherent vision for the future of business. Welcome back to the Octave Leap Podcast. Today, we're not just going to do human design like you know. We're going to go into the hidden gems of human design with somebody that's got a pretty incredible backstory that I've had a lovely chat with. So I'd love to welcome Miko Ramino to the show. How are you doing today, Miko?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today, Dave?
That's always an interesting question in Bali because there's always many layers to that one. But today, pretty good, actually. There's been a lot of excitement happening. I've been building a growth community for holistic practitioners and just sort of seeding that as a way to spiral upwards with a group of incredible people. So that's sort of a project I'm working on. And part of that, actually, which relates to our discussion, is getting your energy right for life and business. Because, you know, you can go and you can apply a bunch of business strategies and read all the books you want. But at the end of the day, if you're feeling inside because you're not following your life design and what you're here to do, it ain't going to work, is it, right? You've probably seen this more than... Yeah.
Totally. So this is my concept that I've built on is called opportunity. And the whole thing revolves about moving inward and the gaining control from the inside out. Because at the moment, we're living in a world where we're mostly being controlled by the outside in, also with our emotions and just the whole thing, physical attitudes, mindset, all of the things are being influenced from the outside. And so really refocusing to the inside is what I'm trying to do. And human design has actually really helped me gain a deeper understanding of my clients in a split second, nearly. I can look at their chart and I can give targeted tools which work for them specifically.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's interesting. Living from the outside in, nothing speaks to this better than the archetype of Saturn. Saturn in the lowest frequency band and the shadow band that, you know, most people kind of live in the world is external authority, the representations of government, of religion, of social order, of family, of all those things. But as you raise your frequency with that, it becomes sort of the authority within. And then acidic level, as the Gene Keys talks about, or they talk about in evolutionary astrology, it becomes natural law. So it's really reversing the role of Saturn. You know, there's a very powerful saying in astrology that if you just simply understand the Saturn placement in your chart, you know, your life will unfold with a lot more ease to it, because Saturn really is here to teach us about rules. Saturn's here to teach us about discipline and the lessons that we're here to learn this life. So have you encountered something like that in human design? Because I know Saturn does play a role in human design, along with many of the other planets, and not just planets, but hidden gems as well.
Absolutely. So when it comes to Saturn, you always also have to look at Jupiter, because they play an important role together. So if you do not fulfill one of them, the other one to punish you, and you really have to figure out what it is you're here to learn, what it is you still need to work on. And then you will raise your frequency in both of these. Well, in human design, it's called gates, which are also placed in specific zodiac signs. So if you would prefer looking at astrology, you can look at the astrological aspects. In human design, we talk about specific gates. But before even looking at the Saturn or the Jupiter, because those are very external planets, like they're very low on the human design chart. And one of the most important planets, or two of the most important planets, is actually the Sun and the Earth when it comes to human design. So before even understanding any of the planets, you really have to understand your type, your strategy, and your inner authority. So understanding these three things and following your strategy and your inner authority, that is going to help you have everything else fall into place. I personally also add asteroids into the mix because you can.
Oh, don't give away the good stuff too early.
Yeah, but it's an interesting aspect because it helps me ground individuals even more easily or help them shine their light more easily. So when we're talking about grounding and shining the light in human design, the grounding is from the earth and shining your light comes from the sun. So understanding which asteroids are placed in these planets, both conscious and unconscious, is going to help you ground yourself and shine your light even more potently.
Wow. That's really, really cool. Because astrologers don't typically look at the earth placement. And of course, the earth placement is 180 degrees from the sun.
Yes.
Right? And in human design, there's this thing called the incarnation cross, which is sun, 180 degrees off of that. And then you rotate about 90 degrees back to your third trimester of gestation. You get another sun and you get another earth. So one placement, it's a 4-for-1 deal, basically. If you know your sun, you can get the other three parts of the incarnation cross free.
Yes, absolutely. And in human design also, as you have mentioned, you have this mandala. So you have the human design chart, which is the picture of a human with all the squares and triangles. And around that, there is another view that you can add to it, adds the mandala. And when it comes to any kind of placement in your chart, so whether it's the black, the conscious placements, or the red, the unconscious placements, so those are the lines that you can see in your design, you can fill them on the mandala outside. And if you have, let's say, for example, the sun in on one side of the mandala, and then let's not take the sun. You take the Saturn, for example, on one side of the mandala. Yes, perfect. That is exactly what we're seeing. So Dave just pulled up the chart for everyone just watching.
And now everybody knows my birthday.
So you can see a reflector here, which is one of the rarest types. So these are 1% population approximately. And very, very rare, therefore. But you can see here that this is very small on the screen.
Oh, there we go. How is that? Is that a little bit better?
What is the third in? Is that your moon?
The third, what, sorry?
The third gate in the mandala.
Oh, the third gate is...
That would be my design moon. Yeah, it's my design moon.
Okay, so the design moon is on the other side of the gate 50, I believe. It's always a bit challenging to see it on the mandala. Yes, it should be gate 50 on the other side of the mandala. So even if it's not colored in your case, it is colored in because it's defined through both Pluto and conscious and unconscious and also through Mars. But let's pretend it wouldn't be colored in. You would still find a lot of useful information on the other side. So in the 50th gate, you would want to take a look at your 50th gate in this case, if your third gate is colored in, and you do feel like there is a struggle within your third gate, you would then focus also on the 50th gate to gain deeper understanding of how it is that you can help yourself move into the light aspect of the third gate if you feel like you're stuck in the shadow.
Mm-hmm. What would you, in this particular case, how would you read moon in the third gate and Pluto in the 50th gate?
So you have the third gate is a lot about, and generally the 360 channel and the all the gates that are coming out of the sacral or out of the root and going towards the sacral. So these are formatting energies, very, very powerful energies. And you have all three of those gates coming from the sacral towards the root. You don't have any channels, obviously, because you're a projector. But this gives you a very changing energy. So if someone defines your 60th gate, for example, or the planets, for example, define it, you have a tendency to, maybe you have something that you want to follow and you're thinking about it, but suddenly you will make the decision and everything can change 180 degrees, but it's a 360 channel because everything can just switch from one moment to the next. Very big decisions can be made very fast within just moments. So in this case, the 50th gate, let me just take a closer look again. The 50th gate in your Mars is a very changing. So the Mars is an energy that still needs a little bit of adaptation. So you still need to learn your lessons. It's going to take some time to grow into this 50th energy. And Pluto is all about transformation as well. So it's really about having challenges, having struggles, and really transforming these into powerful strengths. So you would need to, with the moon in your unconscious moon in your third gate, it would mean as well that these are your values. This is something that is very important to you. So to really pursue these values of the third gate, you need to work on your 50th gate and really gain the skills of 50th gate, because Mars just needs a little bit more time throughout your life. This is going to become more and more powerful in yourself, but it's just going to take a little bit more time before you really fully master it.
That definitely feels very resonant too. So interesting thing what you said about the fast changing, and then also the delayed mastering, or the mastering over time. So I think that's a great example of how, you know, somebody that's skilled with human design can just look at a chart and know things about a person and the way that they're wired without actually meeting the person really. And that's kind of met. Specific energetic information. Well, kind of met, but like not really. We haven't talked in detail for hours or days or anything. And that's yet she can know something that's maybe deeply personal, or something that I might go, wow, yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but hey, you're right.
Well, and on top of that, you're a reflector. So the moon plays a major role in your life. And when it comes to reflectors, every reflector has their more or less unique imprint of the moon. So there are, you would have to follow the lunar cycle and check when is the moon passing through which gates. And then there are going to be more important gates for you specifically. So in this case, the 60th gate is a very, very important gate. So whenever the moon passes through your 60th gate, these are things that can happen, those 180 degrees changes or 60 degrees changes. And a reflector really needs a month time normally to make major decisions. So the more that you get to know yourself, and this is what I love about just life in general, because you don't necessarily need to understand human design. As long as you're using mindfulness and meditation and breathing exercises and yoga or qigong or things like this that just help you really get to know and understand yourself, that in itself is already helping you evolve. And if you are really in tune with yourself, with your inner self, you don't even need to know your design, because these things are just going to fall in place the better that you know yourself. So for a reflector, it's helpful to understand their lunar cycle and to get their own personal lunar cycle chart, so that they understand what is influencing them throughout the month. Mm-hmm. Because every single one of us is being influenced by the planets at every given moment. We're being influenced by the people around us through their energy. So we are actually never our full design, like just purely our design. That never happens, because there's no moment like our birth time that comes back. So we really have to, throughout those changes and throughout the planets and the people that are influencing us, we need to understand who we are. And for me, what has really helped me is to understand the emotional solar plexus. So this was just one of the aspects that was really, really helpful to me to really understand that I don't have an emotional solar plexus defined. I have a few gates out of it, but it's, I think, two gates coming out of it. Also, a fun fact, projectors never really know their charts as well as other people's charts. but I have just two gates coming out of it, and the emotional solar plexus is therefore undefined. So it's not completely open, which means that there are no gates, but it is undefined, which means that there are a few, but it's white in itself. So that means that I'm not an emotional being per se. And when I'm by myself, if I would be sitting by myself in a forest somewhere, I would be as calm as a lake if there is no planet defining my emotional solar plexus. But if someone else comes into the room, for example, which hasn't, and they haven't defined emotional solar plexus, and they are feeling sad, I would pick up the sadness and I may be the one starting to cry. If they're feeling happy, I could be the one picking it up and starting to burst out in laughter. So the emotional being does have emotions. So the emotionally defined being has emotions. And the undefined or open emotional solar plexus takes in these emotions and amplifies them. So to me, this understanding in itself helped me understand why I used to be quite emotional as a teenager, because I didn't understand what was happening. I was taking in all of these emotions, I was amplifying them, and then I would be the one breaking doors because I would close them too hard or things like this. I would just get very emotional.
And I guess in getting emotional, you probably, you know, when we, sometimes we think it's us. So I think that's the first usual thing that people think is when I'm emotional, it's coming from me. But later on, you realize actually it's coming from the environment. It's coming from other people. And, you know, systems like human design are very effective at that. When you have those open centers, it's like your thoughts aren't necessarily all your own. You know, your open head centers can be magnets for what's swirling around in the collective psychic soup. Similarly, emotions that are swirling around, they might come in through that open solar plexus channel and make you feel things that aren't necessarily yours.
Absolutely. It helps you gain a distance. It helps you look at the world in a less victim-oriented way because you're taking things less personal. So you can already understand that from this aspect. And if you're an emotional being, then let's take an example where one emotional being is in a relationship with an undefined emotional being or an open solar plexus. Understanding the dynamics in this relationship is super helpful because the moment that you're feeling these emotions come up, all you need to do is simply speak the right words, because every single one of us will need different things in that moment. Some people that are very tribal in their energy, for example, they may need a touch. It also depends where they are tribally defined, because certain tribal beings, if you touch them at the wrong time, they would explode. It would release all these emotions. And then again, the undefined person would take the brunt of it. And then they would just bounce it back and forth. The argument would escalate. So instead of doing that, it's just best to step away and to give each other space. And also, the emotional being just needs time for clarity. So an undefined emotional being, once they understand that their partner is defined emotionally, you can accept it more easily to actually give them space, give them time to gain clarity. And otherwise, if you're undefined emotionally, you would take it maybe personal. And you also, another big challenge of undefined emotional beings is they lie. It's not necessarily in a big lie or an evil lie, but it's just to protect themselves from receiving the emotional energies from the other person. So as soon as they feel, oh, if I say this now, the other person may feel sad or upset or something like this, or angry. I would take in these emotions and I would then feel sad or upset or angry. And to avoid that, instead, I did used to lie when I was a teenager. I did, but it wasn't anything big, but it was really to protect myself from receiving these emotions. By now, I've learned how to handle it. I've learned how to protect my energy. I've learned how to not take things so personally. But I can see how much I was living in my shadow back in the day as a teenager.
Wow. That's, especially if that behavior didn't continue after, that is quite young to have these realizations about life. Like if we're like, yeah, I cleared that up when I was a teenager, because a lot of the time people still tell little white lies into their adulthood because they still carry a similar fear within them.
Well, I stopped. I wasn't a teenager when I stopped. I was 24. So this was, and I can pinpoint it so precisely because that's the moment that I went to India and I had a huge, it was 9 months that I spent my time there and it was like a rebirth. And I'm not even really over-exaggerating in some cases, but it's a real transformation. And my father always says one daughter went and another came back. Because this is the moment that I learned about yoga, meditation, breathing exercises. So when I talk about yoga, it's the whole entire yogic path. It's not just yoga asanas, poses that you do on the mat, but it's really an entire way of life. And once you follow this way of life, you just become more calm. And for me, it was, as I mentioned previously, I was someone that was very stuck in the external world. And when I started with yoga, I had a depressive phase. So I was depressed for approximately 1.5 years before that. And I always describe it as if I was in my emotions were in a cocoon. So even though I have an undefined emotional plexus, I can still feel emotions. I can still feel happiness and sadness and all of these things through others, yes, through the planets. Also understand when the planets are defining me because I suddenly feel these emotions. But back then, before going to India, it felt like they were in a cotton ball and I didn't have access to them. And every time I laughed, it was as if I was pretending. It was nothing, it didn't feel real. And when I started the yoga poses, it was working on my physical body first. I had already started working on my nutrition and I had already started exercising a lot more 2 years before going to India. But yoga poses are very connected to your energy layer as well, to your chakras and to then the emotions and the mind and your spiritual aspect. So it has a lot of consequences on many, many more things than simply your physical body. And I noticed that suddenly this cotton ball started to untangle, to dissolve. And through yoga poses, I then stepped into the next chapter because I was very, very logical. I didn't believe in energy at that point. And stepping then into the next part was, okay, let's try breathing exercises because breath controls our emotions. The calmer you breathe, the calmer you become. And just like the other way around, the more stressed you are, the more rapid and shallow your breathing, when you're happy, you're laughing, deep, deep breaths and laughter. So both have a big connection to one another, breath and emotions. So the next step was working on breathing exercises. And then the next step was meditation, which I was really pushing away from me for quite some time. And at some point I just said, okay, let's give this a try. So it became more and more subtle and more inwardly focused.
It sounds like you're building from the ground up, from the physical layer up through the emotional and finally to the mental. And yeah, I think sometimes people, they'll get ideas about things and they'll start with meditation and just say it's difficult. But there's so much, so many more denser layers that are throwing them off, that are resulting in the meditation not being the medicine that it could be. It's sort of like it requires a foundation to be established in order for that to actually work properly.
Very much so. And then human design, again, helps me to understand what type of meditation is best for the individual that is in front of me. Because if I have, for example, a generator in front of me, yes, I said so. If let's imagine we have a generator in front of us, and that generator has all four motor centers defined. So there are four motor centers in human design. Let's just imagine that being has all four motors defined. So that makes him an emotional generator, the time to gain clarity. And let's pretend they have all four arrows pointing to the left. So there, if you've seen an advanced human design chart, you will see four arrows at the top next to the head of the figure. And let's just pretend all four are pointing to the left. This makes it a very, very, very energized generator. You're
talking about these ones here, of course, just for yes, people watching. Perfect. Yeah.
Okay. So in this case, you have the red arrows and the black arrows. So the red is unconscious and the black is conscious. And you have the red arrows, one pointing to the left, one to the right. And on the other side, for everyone that is just listening, we have one arrow pointing to the right and another one pointing to the left. So I'm, in this example, suggesting all arrows point to the left. And that makes it a very, very act generator, especially because the four motors are defined. So if I would tell them to meditate after sleeping, for example, this would probably not work, most likely not work, because they have just woken up. They have all of this energy back in their systems. For a generator, they need to exhaust themselves physically, especially if all four motors are defined. They will need to exercise a lot to release all of that energy. And on top of that, arrow pointing to the left. So this would be on the left side of your chart, especially the environmental arrow, which is the second one. So not the top arrow, but the bottom arrow on the left, on the right, on the red side of the chart. This is about the environment. So that person needs an active environment. If the top arrow is also pointing to the left, it's a very active digestion, an active body, an active mind as well. So it's a very, very active being. And the first thing I would recommend is exhaust your body, really exhaust yourself before you can even think about meditating. And this also goes for sleep. A generator like this needs to exhaust themselves physically in order to be able to fall asleep properly. So they need to just come home, be so exhausted that they just want to crash. And then they will have a good night's sleep.
Wow. So they're the kind of people that like are meant to grind it out in life. You know, sometimes society's kind of set up for those people because like, especially if you live in a major city, often the rat race is what we call it, right? But for me, couldn't really do well in the rat race. I was way too exhausted and not in a good way. And when I learned about human design, I'm like, oh, it all makes sense now. No motor center.
Yeah. Yes. So for everyone that doesn't know, reflectors are really here. They have the most resilient aura. They have the most open chart, but they have the most resilient aura. So even though they can sample all of these energies in all of the centers, they will not define themselves through it, at least if they are well balanced. So this is something that reflectors need to learn a lot of the time, because they're being conditioned from approximately 70% of generators and manifesting generators. They're being conditioned from approximately 8% of manifestors. And they're being conditioned of approximately 20% of projectors. So everyone around them is telling them or showing them how to live a life that they are not here to live. So from the mental point of view, you can be very, very conditioned on how you should be living your life. But when it comes to your aura, it is actually quite resilient. So a reflector is here to sample all of these things and to really, they are able to put themselves into the shoes of other people. They are able to understand them, but they don't, they need to learn how to not identify with someone else through centers, and they have a quote unquote easier time, slightly easier time to do this than other types, for example, to really say, okay, I understand this is you and I understand this is not me. But through that, they're here to also reflect the world around them. So it's highly, highly, highly important for them to be in an environment that is healthy for them. Because looking at reflectors is going to help us understand how community is doing. So if a reflector in your life is not healthy, is not happy, is not in good shape, you know that something is going wrong in your community, in your tribe, in your society. So we really need to look at reflectors to know and understand, okay, something needs to change, or yeah, we may be on the right path here.
Yeah, I resonate with a lot of that, especially the being able to step into other people's paradigms, because that's pretty much what I do. You know, I kind of spot opportunities for people, and I've said a lot of things to a lot of different people that I might not believe is true for me, but I know is true for them. And I don't know where it comes from. Sometimes it's often feels just kind of like it's just flowing through me words, which is an interesting sort of phenomenon. And I had to kind of recognize that I've got my own path, my own energy, and that for me, everything else out there is kind of BS. It's fine for them. For me, it doesn't necessarily apply half the time. There's certain things that do, but like when I was younger, I had a lot of challenges getting caught up in ideologies, including spiritual ideologies. And, you know, believing that, oh, this is the one true path and I've got to mold myself to this, which is actually the opposite. It's more like, actually, I've just got to counterpoint myself in relation to this thing. And that's it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can imagine it being a lot to be so open to, because you're constantly receiving informations that are not you, or insights that are not you sometimes. And yeah, I can imagine that being a challenge in a lot of ways. But this is again where it is very helpful to just do a lot of self-reflection. And if you do have a reflector in your life, to ask them questions, or ask them targeted questions, because they are here to guide others as well and to help people move into a direction, but they need to be asked, because if they're not asked, then it's a waste of resource. They're very, very valuable.
Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed when people are like, just sit back and like, tell me something about me. It's like, well, no, ask me a question and I'll give you an answer. Not necessarily like, I don't know. Otherwise it's like a big sea of anything, infinite possibility, right?
Yeah.
But there was something we were chatting about earlier, and I'm just pulling it up right now. We were mentioning something about asteroids. So I want to hear more a little bit about how asteroids can bring a little bit more of an in-depth and specialized analysis when you're looking at a human design chart.
Okay, so asteroids, this came, so a little bit more of a deeper understanding is that I'm a 6-2 projector, ego projector, and I have 4 centers out of 9 centers defined, and I have the cross of consciousness. No, sorry. So that was for a client of mine yesterday. That's why it came up. No, I have the cross of individualism. So it's for me a lot. I only have I have one individual channel and one collective channel. So I don't have any tribal energies. And for me, guiding others is super important, and also doing in-depth research, because I'm currently in a cycle where I have a 5-1 profile. So it's all about having things being projected onto me at the moment, and also diving really deep into things. And that's how, after discovering human design, I then wanted to learn more and more and more from other people. And I never like to just focus on one teacher. I like to gather as much information as I can from many different people, and then kind of put my own spin to it. So in this case, I started human design, so with Ra-Uruhu. I then moved to implement also Richard Rudd's insights on the I Ching. The Gene Keys author. So I also looked into the I Ching itself. So this is the ancient Chinese text. I love the way that Richard Rudd interpreted it and also really contemplated on it. So contemplation is a very, very, very big thing when it comes to the Gene Keys. And the difference between the Gene Keys and human design to me is that human design helps you really understand how other people interact with you and how you interact with other people. It gives you a deeper understanding of who you truly are. And the Gene Keys is, to me, a very, very, it's yet another level to it. So it's more subtle. It's more spiritual in a lot of ways. So if you want the mind, emotions, and physical aspects, you first take a look at human design, and then you take Gene Keys into account as well. So if you're ready for the next step, because the Gene Keys are written in a very enlightened way, I have to say, even the word, because when you look at the several steps, you have the shadow of one gate, which is divided into reactive and repressed, and then you have the light aspect of a gate, and then you have mastery / the siddhi. So I call it mastery just to not scare people away too much. But the siddhi is really about elements of enlightenment. So every gate has an enlightenment energy to it as well. And so when you're ready to step into that kind of thinking and attitude, then you can start with Gene Keys. And what I then did, I was looking at a lady called Kim Gould. So she's someone who studied human design, and she was then really fascinated about also integrating astrological elements into it, like, for example, the ascendant. So she couldn't find that in human design. And then she was wondering why and where is it located in my human design chart? And she went from a split definition to a single definition if she added her ascendant to the mate in her human design chart. And that was really intriguing to her because she didn't really feel like a split definition in the first place most of the time. So she didn't feel like she had the desire to have someone else in her life, or that she felt like something is missing. She felt pretty whole in herself. So she then also started to look at the asteroids. And to me, that makes so much sense when I work with clients. So I only do an asteroid analogy or analysis after having an introduction reading, because human design, there is just so much to talk about. And another client of mine asked me recently, so is it really true that depending on the person that is reading your chart, you will receive different information? And to a certain extent it is, but not because the chart provides different information, but because there's just so much in it that you can interpret that you have to find a focus. So that's why it's also very important to understand what the client wants out of this reading in the first place. And when you then add the asteroids into the mix, you can, as I had said previously, find a better way to ground the client, a better way to have them shine their light. So things that you would look at first would be, what else is in your Earth? What else is in your sun? Which asteroids also from there? And then you can also, so I would like to take Beyonce as an example. You have her chart, and I wanted to understand, because she has an entirely undefined emotional solar plexus. And I wanted to understand, where is her music coming from? So the 12th gate is known, it's a throat gate, and it is known to have a very special, very powerful voice. So when the 12th gate speaks or sings at the right time, they will have a very powerful message to spread, and people will listen, and it can transform them. She doesn't have that gate defined in her traditional human design. And adding asteroids into the mix doesn't mean that you're becoming suddenly an emotional being, because in her case, she does have asteroids in her 12th gate and also in her, let me just take 1 second, in her 22nd gate. So she has asteroids in both of these gates, and that gives her the power to release her emotions through her voice with these asteroids. And she's even through Hygieia, this is one of the asteroids, she's able to really provide healing through her music. She has Hephaestus in her 12th gate, which means this is a master of craftsmanship and being able to transform and mold people and making, shifting raw material, which would be emotions, into something really useful and productive, for example. So
gotcha.
She's got Orpheus, which is also coming from her 22nd gate, which is about music and aptitude for it. And so there's so much information you can gather from all of it and a deeper understanding of how someone is functioning.
Mm-hmm. So the asteroids that you use, I heard Hygieia use Vesta as well.
I use many, many, many different asteroids, I don't know. But it's really relying on the client, him or herself. So I would first, as I said, look at the sun and the earth, both conscious and unconscious. And whichever asteroids are in these planets are very important to that person. The methodology behind these asteroids is very important. And then also I do connect with it on a spiritual level. So I meditate on it and I try to understand it on a deeper way as well. And to see which parts of the methodology is actually important for that person.
Right. I think that's important too. Because when I do readings for people, and I use evolutionary astrologies where I started, I also use human design and gene keys, but you can get lost in all the information. So I often really do my best to tune in and really do my best to like sit back and see what is relevant. And so I say that all these things are just launch pads into intuitive insights and what's actually meant to come through. So I think that's beautiful that you recognize that, because I know there's so many asteroids out there. You can have thousands of them. And would they give a person more meaning and clarity? Well, if they're just kind of done mentally or as some sort of a cataloging exercise, probably not. Probably just leave them feeling overwhelmed and confused versus actually tuning in and being like, what can I use as like a dash of this to really like bring out this recipe in a way?
That is so true what you just said. And I appreciate that you mentioned this as well, because to me, human design was always just another tool for me to connect more deeply with my own intuition. So you are maybe someone who's able to channel more easily than others because you're so open. And I still have a very strong mind, also the way that I was raised and So for me, this India trip was really transformative in that way as well, because I was getting so many different insights and informations from other people, but also from my own experiences, that there is something beyond the mind. There is so much more than just what the mind and what the physical senses can even see and feel and hear. And human design was just a helpful way for me to really connect with that aspect more, to kind of prove my intuition to myself. Because sometimes it just, yeah, you need it. You were like, okay, if you're calling someone, you're like, I just felt the need to call you. I don't know what's going on. And the other person tells you, no, everything is fine. You don't receive the feedback, even though the other person is really in deep need to actually have a conversation. If that person doesn't tell you, you won't know. So human design is kind of giving you that ability to get to know yourself, to get to know others, to get to know clients.
It's interesting because I've done readings for people, and sometimes they're older and they're quite far along in their path. And a lot of the time those readings are just affirming what they already have experienced or know intuitively. Versus, you know, like you're saying, it's like it gives you an articulation of what you could have for intuitive insights. However, stage of relationship do you have with your own intuition? You know, and also to the articulation, there is something so powerful about being able to affirm something, saying this gives me full permission now to accept what I've always known about myself. And not only that, but it gives me new language, new insights to bring out the richness, subtlety, and nuance around this particular aspect of my spirit, my mind, my personality, whatever it is.
That is so true. Yes. The amount of times I hear from clients, oh my God, I'm not crazy. This is such a this is such a common phrase I hear, really. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're perfectly fine, perfectly well designed the way that you are. And you are meant to live out this way of who you are and hide it, not try to be someone else. And yeah, it's every time I hear that, I'm like, oh my God, I'm really thankful that I just received this feedback. And people start to glow in their eyes. They start to be happy and they more relaxed. They feel more seen. They feel more accepted, more. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
It's interesting too about intuition, right? Because if you have an intuitive hit and somebody's either, and you, it involves somebody else, like you phone somebody else, something up and they're maybe not aware of it, or they don't want to go into it and they say, no, nothing's up. It makes you question your intuition, right? Yeah. And so I think one of the biggest problems with people who are intuitive is that they question it. And as a result, they suppress it. And so absolutely, having some sort of validation can be very important to re-engaging and actually accepting that gift back into your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 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 absolutely. And in human design, so the inner authority that you talk about, that is basically your intuition. So you have the strategy of how you receive kind of your opportunities in life. So let's just take a projector, for example. They need to wait for invitation. That is their strategy. And then the first thing I hear from projectors when I tell them is, how long do I need to wait? Or what am I waiting for? And how do I know that the invitation is for me and things like this? And what every single one of us needs to learn is patience. That is the thing that every single type really needs to learn. We can't really just go around expecting things to show up like a projector. They need to wait for invitation. And it is hard. Yeah, it is hard. But think about it in the other way, because by waiting for invitation, you're already also excluding all the opportunities that are not there for you. Because if you're going to be a proactive projector and you're going to just push, and you're trying to gather these opportunities on your own, that's not going to work. You're going to face more resistance. So you may achieve the things that you want, but it's going to be much, much harder. And if you simply wait for invitation, these things are just going to run more smoothly. But that also doesn't mean that every single invitation is actually correct for you. And that is where your inner authority comes in. That is where your intuition comes in. So human design teaches you that you need to step out of your mind, at least to make decisions. It's not saying that the mind is evil and it's useless. It is saying that you don't make decisions through your mind. You really need to step back into your body and understand, where is my intuition situated in the first place? So a lot of people, because they're so focused on the external world, they have lost their connection to their body. So that's the first thing before even understanding your intuition from a human design perspective. You need to step back into your body and feel into yourself. Where is my intuition? How does it speak to me? And human design kind of guides you towards where it is centered. It doesn't have to be a physical place in your body, but it already shows you how it speaks to you. So, for example, as I have mentioned, the emotional authority needs time. They can't make split-second decision. They should always say, let me get back to you on this. They should not ever say a spontaneous yes very fast, at least not for big decisions. So, because it's going to create more resistance. And the splenic authority, or the splenic inner authority, that's the triangle on the opposite side of the emotional solar plexus. They are here to make split second decisions. Literally split second. And the spleen only speaks once. It's very, very subtle, and it will not repeat itself. So if you don't listen to your spleen the moment that you, for example, encounter someone, if you meet someone and your spleen says, hell no, that person is not for me, then you may start a conversation with them. Your mind to come in and they're going to say, yeah, but they have good qualities and maybe they can help me in that way. Or maybe it's beneficial to be friends because of this. And the spleen from the beginning, from the get-go, was telling you, hell no. But your mind came in.
No, the spleen knew it was going to drain your bank account.
Exactly.
They were up to no good. There's one thing in there I want to touch on. This is Rich. This has been coming up for me lately, is the art of patience. I can't remember the exact number of the gene key, but the one that speaks into patience, intuition, and clarity, or impatience, intuition, and clarity. I think that's the progression. But I was just reflecting on that nature of impatience, and it's a superseding. It's like we're trying to superimpose our will onto the natural rhythms of life. It's like you can't make a flower open up more quickly than it's going to. You can water it, you can, you know, till the soil, but you can't make, if you force the flower open, you're going to destroy it. Similarly, you can't rush summer. You know, you can try to manipulate the weather. It usually doesn't work out well. But you can't rush summer. You can't rush winter. You can't rush the seasons of life. You can only move with them and position yourself accordingly. And so impatience is basically us arrogantly trying to rush life. And as a result of that, we get out of our natural rhythm and natural timing. We don't end up in the right place at the right time. And patience is a way of relaxing back into that current of life again. And when that happens, that's when we can begin to see. And that's when we begin to hear. And that's when we are able to actually know which invitations are right as a projector and which signals are the ones that we need to respond to.
Yes. Very true.
One of my mentors once said, he goes, enlightenment first, then patience and compassion. And it's very true. Especially when you live in Bali, everyone's freaking enlightened here. And they're not very patient either. You watch them on the bikes. They talk big, hands on the heart, talking from their head about big spiritual concepts, and then they're zooming in and out of traffic on the bike in a rush to go to the next cacao ceremony.
Yes. So on the patient side, so this is also what I mean, that you don't need to know human design per se. You really do need a few tools in your life. And in this aspect, mindfulness is extremely helpful, because you start to recognize the things that come up inside of your own body, the triggers, the things that are triggering you and how your body reacts. This is how you start to recognize your intuition in the first place. And the patient side of it is also connected to switching things off around you, because we're constantly being distracted by everything around us. And for everyone listening and watching, I would like to ask the question, when was the last time you sat in silence? Because we are missing that a lot, and we're missing boredom a lot. And boredom is where creativity comes from. Imagine or think about if you're older than 30, sitting at the bus stop and waiting for the bus and not having anything to play with except sticks and stones and watching the ants crawl on the floor or something like this. You started to think of things to do, and you wouldn't, you don't do that anymore. You just grab your phone, you distract yourself, and you receive anything at the click of a button within a few days or a few hours even. So instant gratification is another challenge that we're facing, which is also blocking us from being patient. But really turning everything off, music, podcasts, TV shows, conversations, like everything, and just sitting and being, that is something that we have lost, but it's something that is desperately needed to be re-implemented into the world, because we need to learn patience again.
Yeah, and I don't think society's really moving in that direction.
No.
You know, they're like, we need another G. We need to go from 5G to 6G now so that we can get faster. We can do distracted things faster than we currently are, with higher resolution, and we can have, you know, video streaming in higher quality and more of them coming at you at once. You know, it's at some point, it's like that whole trajectory, it needs to fall apart because it's so out of sync with natural rhythm. And whether, I don't care what people believe, if it's intentional or if it's accidental, just due to poor thinking. But at the end of the day, that trajectory, and this is why people are waking up, is because as it progresses and as it develops, it's increasingly at odds with natural law, with the rhythm of life.
Mm-hmm.
And until the hubris of it says, we were wrong, we've got to take a different path, it's going to keep going, and it's going to keep trying, and it's going to keep pushing in a direction that's just going to cause more problems. The good news is that there's an organic uprising, an organic evolution playing out right now, and people... I'm meeting all sorts of people who, in Bali, for instance, Bali's a hub for these people that never really would have thought like this before, you know, and more people I meet are generally at a further stage of awakening to a more harmonious, rooted in natural law lifestyle than they were a couple of years ago. I don't see many people going in the opposite direction. I see people that maybe haven't woken up at all that are a bit jangled and in a crisis and maybe reaching for things or trying out things. But, you know, I know where that path leads. That path eventually leads to a rock bottom like experience and then a breakthrough experience. The other thing I wanted to speak to in what you were saying that was very fascinating was the way that Richard Rudd, because the Gene Keys is all about DNA, of course. Right. And it's basically, the art of contemplation modulates the rate at which light passes through our DNA, and therefore it can epigenetically heal a lot of the shadow aspects, the junk DNA, the 97% that scientists basically threw out when they discovered DNA, that is the shadow of like our ancestors, primal human form, primal human fears, when we were reptiles, when we were microbes, like all of that was the formation of DNA. All of that was consciousness that a tortuous path that involves both light aspects and unresolved shadow aspects. And all of that formulates baggage that gets passed on and passed on and passed on in evolution. And to know that our capabilities are so advanced that we can literally bring light to the shadow of our ancient formative past, that is like, wow. Like, I mean, we kind of have to right now, because as it gets louder and the distractions get louder out there and the noise gets louder and the frequency of the planet goes up, there's more stimulus coming at us. And if our DNA has imbalances and has shadows, it controls the receptors that release certain hormones, that release chemical signals in the body. And as a result of that, if we're existing in a state of imbalance, we're going to feel very imbalanced because of that DNA and the signaling that it's putting out to the pituitary gland and to the pineal gland, which are, of course, the master hormonal centers in the body. So we're going to keep feeling... It's literally like forcing the evolutionary process in people. It forces people to contemplate, to look within, because that process changes their DNA, which then changes the hormones, which changes the electrochemical outputs through the body. And all of a sudden, we start to feel different when certain stimulus comes in, which is wild. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we're at a point now where we have language, like sophisticated language. And, you know, I think, what is it? Is it gate... It's either gate 61 or 63. I always have to research this stuff. I'm not like, I don't remember it very well, but one of them speaks to being able to articulate the unknowable. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because it's like because I think, let me just check. I got my body graph here. What gate it is exactly. Yeah, it's 61. It is 61, because that right angle cross of Maya basically speaks to articulating and bringing forth the unknowable. And that's what I feel is really tasty when I read science. And I'm like, oh, this actually overlaps with the great mystery that the sages have been saying. And now there's a little bit more articulation for it. And I think we're at a beautiful point in time where theoretical physicists and biology are converging in what they're discovering to basically say, oh yeah, those guys in loincloths were right the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of information.
That was a big rant. I don't know where that one came from.
Well, for you, it comes from everywhere. It comes directly from source. No, I wouldn't even call it a rant. It was a beautiful monologue. And I think what I would like to focus on a little bit is the Corona pandemic, because this is the moment where a lot of people were snapping out of things, or they were just snapping. So those are the two options that you had. I'm focusing on this because you're saying that you're meeting a lot of people that are moving into this more, into the higher frequencies, and they want to make a change in the world. And it's interesting because I feel the same way, but when I had a conversation with someone the other day, they were saying, no, they keep meeting other people. And I think it's, of course, also connected to your frequency yourself. So the higher you raise your frequency, the more that you're going to attract the people that are also on that frequency. And this kind of goes back to the strategy in the example of the projector. You will attract the right invitations the higher you raise your frequency, and the more that you do focus on your self-love and self-care aspect. So this is a huge, huge thing when it comes to the program that I have developed. I'm really focusing on bringing people back to this, because we all have this well of love within us, and that is directly connected to source. So we have parts of source in us, and the more that we are able to release this and unblock our layers, so that we have several layers that are surrounding this inner well of love, our soul, and the more that we are able to release the blockages within these layers, the more we can shine our light, and more that we will attract the right frequencies. And in the human design aspect, everything is currently crumbling. So up to the year 2027, this is where we're stepping out of the cross of planning into the next stage of life. And the next part, so up to that point, everything we have created is crumbling. And also, that's why I was mentioning the corona pandemic. We are changing our own inner attitudes. So people, in my opinion, are also changing frequencies and moving into the right direction. But for that to happen, we first need to burn everything down. So it's really this Shiva Shakti kind of thing. You really need to burn things to the ground. You need to burn the phoenix to the ground to rise again. And sadly, yes, this is what we're also seeing at the moment. Things are just falling apart. The politics, the wars that are happening, there are just so much that is crumbling. And also with the corona pandemic, where everything around us was suddenly casting us, was really putting us back into a cage. And we had the choice. We could either continue our evolution, our own proper evolution. We can focus on diving deeper into ourselves and evolving on all our levels, or we can take to the opposite side and just drown ourselves with Netflix and alcohol and all of these things. So that comes back to the point of external influences, and we have it all in our hands. We have the choice to always, every single day, make the choice to either take it up into our own hands, regardless of what is happening outside of us, and really just continue our evolutionary process. But yeah, it's going to be a wild ride until 2027, and even a few years beyond that.
Yeah. I saw this going to about 2032 was the kind of year I had this pegged. Because I feel like there's a couple more shockwaves that are necessary that have to happen. I mean, it's not even their plan. It's just like they will happen because the force of evolution is meeting the force of resistance. When an unstoppable object hits an immovable object, there's going to be a tremendous amount of friction, and there's going to be a tremendous amount of blowout in a way. And the only thing we can do to prevent that for ourselves is be as relaxed as possible. To be as relaxed as possible, like you said, you said it very beautifully, is these little areas in us that are holding on and shadowy. It's like we have to go through those. We have to quiet down enough to actually reconcile that in order to be soft, so that when the trigger comes, it's that we're not going to break. It's we bend, we don't break with it.
Yeah, and that's another great point that you're making. It's really important to also live through the shadows. So we all have all aspects in our design. So even though we have a few things defined and undefined in our charts, we have all of the 64 keys or 64 I Chings or however you want to call it, 64 gates. We all have all elements of it inside of us. So that's why rereading the 64 Gene Keys from Richard Rudd is a beautiful experience for every single one out there, because you will learn. It's like a Bible. It's like it's showing humanity in its entirety, from the shadow to the light to the mastery of it or to the city. And you can learn so much from it, and just also understanding that you do need to pass through the show. You do need to experience the shadow in order to even understand that you have stepped into the light, and in order to also bring other people from the shadow into the light. You do need all of it.
Absolutely. And I think the amount of time we spend enmeshed in the shadow can vary from person to person. There's certain shadows we can move through quickly, and they can be done internally. And then there's other shadows that play out over prolonged periods of time and tend to create like a vortex-like effect in our life. So the choice is yours, but you're absolutely right. And I think even at the, by the way, the Gene Keys book, it's only 600 pages long. You can get through it in an afternoon. It's really easy. It's a really easy read. Don't worry, folks. Joking. But at the end of the book, you know, he lists out all the shadows, and he says, you know, if you're experiencing any of these, and you will experience all of them, if you read what all those shadows are, I can say at some point in my life, I've probably encountered one of those, or all of those, sorry, at different points. But it also then it shows you how to transition into the gift of each one. So like you said, we do have to move through all of these shadow elements because, look, everybody's got the same 64 codons of DNA. Those are within each of us. It's just there's certain definitions and certain placements that might play a different role than other ones.
Yeah, have a more consistent energy flow towards them.
Yes. Wow, this has been a big, big conversation, from getting into minute details about human design and gene keys into big picture stuff, into life. I got to say, like, I'm feeling pretty exalted right now, like just internally sort of like, this is really cool. I also too, like just talking to you, I move through a lot in myself, in my own inner landscape. So I do honor the potency you bring to the conversation. Both from having known this system and also from, you know, your own frequency and the work you've done. So thank you so much. If people want to know more about you, or they potentially want to get in touch for a reading, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did, is there a way they can do that? Is there somewhere they can go to find out more about you?
Yes. So first, thank you to you as well. This was a really fun conversation that just flew by. I didn't even realize we had already spent an hour. But it was a pleasure being here. And yes, if you would like to get in touch, you can go to my website, opportunity.life. So this is opportunity with Y-O-U-N-I-T-Y. And you can schedule a reading there. I always ask for a 15-minute free call before that, because I want to know if we are a link. And because this is a human design reading is very, very personal. And I would like you to enjoy this conversation with me and also to just really take things from it that you can implement into your life.
So the links to Miko's website will be in the description below, whether you're watching on YouTube or you're listening on one of the audio platforms. So thank you, because that is quite the invitation, no pun intended. So thank you very much for joining the show. And thank you very much to the listeners who are going to listen to this. I know that many of you love to nerd out on human design. And so you all got very, very richly fed with this conversation today. So thank you to Miko. And it was wonderful doing this. Take care. Have a good one.
Thank you, Dave. And thank you, listeners.